And welcome everybody to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast for landgrantholyland.com, your free premier resource for all things Ohio State news and Ohio State athletics. I am your host, Matt Brown. I can be seen on the Twitters at MattSBN, and our excellent site is at landgrant33. We're on Facebook. We are on Blog Talk Radio. We're on iTunes. We're on, I think it's itunes.com/SBNation or itunes.com/LandGrantHolyLand. So you can find lots of episodes here of the show. We are recording this on a Friday afternoon, so we'll get a couple more days of ramp up here before a football game of some import that you guys might have heard of. The Ohio State Buckeyes, of course, playing in the national championship game against the Oregon Ducks. We had a chance to talk with our friend and co-worker here at SB Nation, who does some work here with video, Mr. Dan Rubenstein, on our last show, which you should definitely listen to if you haven't yet, because Dan's really smart, breaking down some parts here of the Oregon game. And we are going to do a special bonus episode on that game, getting in touch with some more information here that we didn't get to go as in-depth with on Oregon with our friends at our excellent SB Nation blog, Addicted to Quack. I think that's my favorite blog name that we have across our entire network. That'll be Sean, and he'll be joining us here in a little bit. We have a couple of other stories that have nothing to do with Ohio State in the championship game that I wanted to touch on before we dig into that a little bit deeper, starting with this. It's our breaking news hit. We haven't had a chance to play that in a little while, so good to bust that out. Breaking news-ish, Jim Tressel, Ohio State former coach at Youngstown State, and now the president of Youngstown State University, will be added to the College Football Hall of Fame. It's kind of fun to watch everyone squirm about this a little bit, since the Hall of Fame has been like, Jim Tressel's only being admitted for his work here at Youngstown State, but Ohio State puts out a press release. There's a picture of Tressel in his Ohio State stuff. Clearly an excellent coach. And if you think that it's a travesty that he's getting these accolades because he rigged a raffle and lied about tattoos, then I think you should go to prison, because that's ridiculous. We'll talk about Tressel. We'll talk about some other things here in a little bit. But now we have our friend Sean, who's joining us here from Addicted to Quack, to help us talk a little bit more about this gigantic game coming up here. Sean, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for taking some time here to chat with us. What's the general feeling right now within the Oregon fan base beyond excitement? Is it overwhelming confidence? Is there concern about anything here? Is there disbelief? Well, what are you guys thinking?
You know, you're going through kind of your typical sort of emotions the week leading up to a national championship game. I think fans overall, I think they like the matchup better with Ohio State than if it had been against Alabama. I think that's if they can do things their way, I think the Ducks match up a little bit nicer against the Buckeyes. And I think fans are really excited for it. Ohio State's a really great program. It'll be kind of if they are able to come out on top with that win and win their first national title, it'll be kind of sweet to get that Rose Bowl redemption from back in the 2010 Rose Bowl. So I think a lot of fans are really looking forward to the game. They're getting really excited, especially going into this final weekend here.
Yeah, and who can blame them? You have two really exciting football teams, two teams that play an up-tempo, fun offense with lots of motion here in the backfield, two really big programs over the last couple of years. It should be great. One other thing that these two teams have in common, and this is something that I don't think our fan base fully appreciates, is how both sides have really overcome a lot of injury adversity. And with Ohio State, everyone wants to talk about all the quarterbacks that have gone down, but it's my understanding that Oregon has lost even more starters to injury throughout the season, especially along the offensive line in the beginning of the year. Can you tell us a little bit more about how Oregon's managed to overcome adversity with missing some guys, and who else have they had to lose beyond some of the people that we may have heard about in the very beginning of the year?
Yeah, that's really been kind of the theme of their season, really, has been overcoming adversity. A lot of that was centered around the offensive line. It seemed like it seemed like every week there was some new injury that had popped up where Oregon was forced to go to, they have what kind of pulled their next man in mentality. And that's really what's carried them throughout the season, is that the coaching staff has done a great job in having everyone prepared, always ready to, you know, always game ready, always ready to step in and be the next man to step up. And that's really what they've done all year. That has worked out really well for them. It was a little bit shaky early in the year when, you know, the line issues started to pop up. And, you know, I remember against Washington State early in the season, Marcus Mariota was sacked 7 times. And I got to tell you, I didn't know if he would make it out in one piece after that game, much less for the rest of the season. But the guys who stepped in, they've done a really great job all season in, you know, making adjustments, protecting their quarterback, kind of protecting the crown jewel of the program, if you will. And it's not just the offensive line too. It's, you know, one of the biggest injuries before this season even started was losing Braylon Addison for the year. He was going to be Oregon's kind of leading receiver going into the year. And instead, the guy they had coming in with the most experience from the year before was Keenan Lowe. I think only had maybe about 18 catches or so, if I remember right from last year. And what they were able to do with that, as far as the wide receivers go, is they were really able to kind of adjust and spread it out. And there was kind of a new unsung hero that stepped up every week. You know, Devin Allen delivered some big games against Michigan State. Obviously, Darren Carrington had a huge game in the Rose Bowl. You know, Pharaoh Brown, when the Ducks had him, he had some big games during the year. So it was really a new guy stepping up every week. And you never quite knew who was going to step up for the Ducks, but there was always someone ready to step up. And I think that's what made them so dangerous, is that with a quarterback like Marcus Mariota, they could beat you in so many different ways. And he has this knack of, you know, taking guys that might not look all that impressive on paper and just really making them better football players on the field. And it's worked out really well for them this year.
Sure. When you have somebody whose decision-making as a quarterback seems to be nearly unrivaled in college football, he's perhaps one of the most accurate passers that I can remember in recent memory. A practice situation that allows so many guys to get reps and get familiar with the scheme and then the system that opens things up and is really kind of egalitarian, it seems like, with the distribution of the football. It makes sense that everyone else around him, their performance is going to be elevated. It makes it really, really very fun to watch. I know that on this podcast and throughout a lot of, I guess, pervert sports media, you know, obviously we talk a lot about Mariota. We talk a lot about Freeman, who's been outstanding and is very young. But outside of the context of injuries, I'm not sure that we talk too much about Oregon's wideouts. And maybe there isn't, you know, some kind of, you know, big five-star name there. What can you tell us specifically individually about some of these players, and what should Ohio State fans be watching for out of that position group on Monday?
And that's, you know, that's kind of what I had just been touching base on there, is that they really don't have a superstar wide receiver. They don't have a guy, when you look at their receiving statistics throughout the year, they don't have a guy that you pinpoint and you say, okay, that's our guy, we've got to shut him down. They really spread the ball around. The most interesting thing is that their leading receiver this year was Byron Marshall, who's actually a running back by design. And he got transferred to more of a slot receiver position of Duck utilized him this year when they had kind of a crowded backfield back there with Thomas Tyner and Royce Freeman, Byron Marshall. So he moved out to more of a slot role, and he really stepped up and wound up leading the Ducks in catches, receiving yards. He had 5 receiving touchdowns. A couple of their key guys, unfortunately, aren't going to be there on Monday. They lost Devin Allen in the Rose Bowl.
Right.
Allen led the teams in touchdowns this year with 7 touchdowns. I'm curious to see if Darren Carrington can step up and have another huge game like he did in the Rose Bowl. you know, he had that 58-yard touchdown pass that was really one of kind of Oregon's boom plays that gave him a huge, huge jolt of momentum. And I think the Ducks are going to be relying heavily on him again to step up again and really deliver, you know, deliver kind of one of those clutch performances. But they've got, you know, so they've got a number of different ways to beat you. They're not, unfortunately, they're not as deep as they'd like to be going into this game. But when you have a quarterback like Marcus Mariota, you know, those, the Ducks have been fortunate enough where the, those problems kind of sort out themselves and someone always seems to step up. So I have no doubt in my mind that someone, you know, Darren Carrington or someone else, someone's going to step up on Monday and deliver a huge game.
Sure. So naturally, given the performances over the last several weeks here for both these teams, the conversation really is dominated by a discussion of both these teams' offenses. And they're both very fun to watch. They're both very fast. They're both all over the field, and that's great. I'd like to know a little bit more about some of the personnel here on Oregon's defense, especially since if we look at F-plus or some of these advanced efficiency statistics, it looks like the Buckeyes should have an advantage with their ability to run on Oregon. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the specific playmakers that Buckeye fans need to be aware of for this Oregon defense?
Yeah, there's a couple guys I'll be keeping an eye out on Monday's game. The first being DeForest Buckner on the defensive line. This year, Buckner, he led the tackles for losses this year. And if he and the rest of the defensive line, if they can bring their A game and stop Ezekiel Elliott, who's kind of the you know, the keys to the offense that drives Ohio State's offense. If he has a big game and they can slow down Ezekiel Elliott, that's going to go a long way towards Oregon winning this game. So the defensive line, they've really made a lot of improvements throughout the year. They've gotten stronger as the year went on, and that'll be the guy I'll be watching up front is DeForest Buckner. Out in the secondary, I want to see if Eric Dargan can deliver another big game. You know, heading into the Rose Bowl, there were a lot of questions surrounding how the Ducks are going to replace Ifo Ekpre-Olumu. And Dargan stepped in as kind of that next man in, like we said. And he delivered a huge game. He had eight tackles. He had an interception, which came during the point where Florida State kind of had their third-quarter meltdown. So if the Ducks can get the ball out of Elliott's hands, which starts with, you know, DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead, the guys up on that defensive line, and force Cardale Jones to throw, I think Dargan can play a huge role like he did in the Rose Bowl, and that'll really be a key towards Oregon winning this game.
Sure, sure. I would completely agree. The key for this defense is going to be to find ways to take the ball out of Elliott's hands and make Cardale Jones beat you by throwing. I think I'm differing a little bit here from the most of Ohio State internet. I'm not nearly as bullish on Jones, I think, as others are, even though we've had two games of sample size and he's done exceptional against very, very good defenses. And Ohio State's wide receivers are very strong, but there was probably for half that Alabama game, Cardale Jones was throwing into the sidelines. And I am uneasy about the prospect of him having to throw the ball 30 times, especially since his skill set is to take advantage of going vertically and taking the advantage of the short and medium passing routes that Oregon may allow in this defense. It doesn't seem like necessarily a strength of his, but who knows? You know, I did not expect Ohio State to be here at this point of the season. Did people bail on Oregon after the loss to Arizona, or was there still kind of a feeling like, you know, even though there were some hiccups in the beginning of the year, this is still a championship caliber team?
Yeah, and the interesting thing about Oregon is that there's only been one time that going into their bowl game, there's only been one time that they were flawless and pretty and about near as perfect as you can get. And that was that 2010 season when they went undefeated in the regular season and then lost to Auburn in the title game. But they always seem to have kind of one slip up every year. You know, you never know quite when it's going to come, but the Ducks, for whatever reason, are that team that just, you know, they're always going to have just one slip up. And this year it came The fortunate thing this year is they came earlier than it normally does. We're used to kind of a November stumble, which really hurt you late in the season. So the kind of blessing in disguise is that the Ducks were able to get their stumble out of the way early against Arizona, who's kind of been Oregon's kryptonite recently, kind of like Stanford had been in recent years. And that was, you know, that was a huge win for the Ducks in the Pac-12 title game to kind of get their redemption on that and really kind of complete the regular season portion of their schedule. So that was, you know, that was really, like I said, a blessing in disguise that they were able to kind of get that loss out of the way early in the year. And as we said earlier, overcome adversity and really make the adjustments they needed to, to make a run. And that's what I kind of like about the college football playoff is that, you know, you can make a mistake, you can slip up, and you can still give yourself a chance to rebound from that and really prove that you belong in that field of four teams. And that's what the Ducks did after that loss to Arizona. They really stepped up. They won some tough games, some games that looked close at first and wound up being a shootout. A lot of Oregon's blowout wins, against like Cal and Utah and things like that. They were tougher games in the first half than the final score might suggest. And they really grinded out some wins and kind of turned on the throttle in the second half. So I'll be curious to see if we're looking at the same type of game from Oregon as we've seen from them, where it's a back and forth first half and then they get a couple turnovers their way and they start to put their foot in the gas pedal in the second half, or if it's going to be, if it's going to be a shootout or kind of what that second half is like. I think the first half is going to be real close, but seeing how that second half shifts, it's going to be kind of what everyone keeps their eye on, if Oregon can pull away or if they're going to, or if the two teams are going to just have to outgun each other with a shootout.
Yeah, that assessment doesn't seem wrong to me, and it's going to be, I'm really interested to see how this goes, because I feel like these are two teams that are more similar than perhaps their fan bases will give them credit for, or some national commentators, not just in tempo and in speed and in some offensive sets here, but in being second half teams and with the importance of turnovers and with, the way their defenses are set up are very similar. It would not shock me if this goes, very close in the first half and then hinges on a couple of these small mistakes that tend to escalate, which is the problem when you play the Ducks, as Utah and UCLA and Florida State can all testify to. I also agree about the playoff. Like it's weird how the few years coming up to this, how that there was this concern that the playoff would somehow cheapen the value of the regular season. But if anything, it's made it more interesting because, as you've seen and have I seen, it's almost impossible to go undefeated. It's almost impossible to go undefeated even when you have like a massive talent advantage over almost everybody that you play. Ohio State has that for most of the Big Ten, and Oregon has that for large chunks of the Pac-12, but not with everybody. And sometimes they lose to teams that have those superior talent, and sometimes things like Arizona happen. Marshall couldn't go undefeated. Alabama couldn't go undefeated. So it's great that there's a chance that you could, to get some redemption over a loss. And, it was so fun to watch that Pac-12 championship game, because if that wasn't a redemption, I don't know what it was, from really completely physically dominating a team that had given them some trouble before. I want to shift gears here for a second. And I know that this is really premature, but we were discussing this in our staff room earlier about some kind of way too early next year top 25. And obviously Oregon's going to be losing their Heisman Trophy quarterback and one of the best college quarterbacks here of all time. But it does seem like there's a lot of experience coming back for next year. Is the expectation for the Ducks for next season to be a playoff caliber team? And if so, what would the strengths of that team be?
Right, exactly. The scary thing is that, Marcus Mariota will 99.99% most likely go to the NFL draft. We're all kind of hanging on to the sliver of hope that he comes back, but there's really, especially if he wins this title game, there's no reason for him to. So the biggest question is going to be, who's going to replace him, at quarterback? Is it going to be, you know, is it going to be Jeff Lockie? Is it going to be Travis Waller? You know, is it going to be one of the new guys stepping in? There's a lot of uncertainties there. So I think that next year is kind of going to be, I'm almost afraid it's going to be kind of a transitional year. I can't say with confidence right now that it's going to be a playoff team. All year we've said, you know, knowing that Mariota's likely gone after this year, we've said that kind of this is our window again for a national title. You know, this year is the best shot that they have. And they put themselves in that position, you know, like we thought they would. But next year I think it's going to rely heavily on the running game with, you know, if Royce Freeman can avoid kind of a sophomore slump, you know, if Thomas Tyner can stay healthy throughout the year, I think a big weight of Oregon's success is going to fall on the running game just to kind of take a little bit of pressure off of whoever comes in as quarterback and kind of, you know, you're having to fill the shoes of Marcus Mariota, and that's just an impossible task. You can't replace Marcus Mariota. He is, you know, he's a once in a lifetime quarterback at Oregon. And so that's kind of the direction I see it going next year. I still think they're going to be a successful team. You know, I think they'll get to that double digit win mark like they need to. But with, you know, even with a, you know, a kind of a 4-team playoff and almost an expanded field from what we've been used to in the past, I think they would get in with an 8-team playoff, but I don't know if they can do it with a 4-team playoff next year. Give it another year for kind of, you know, that quarterback situation to kind of work itself out. And I think Oregon's right back in that national title mix. But I think next year, Ducks fans might have to be patient with kind of a transitional year.
Sure. It's obviously so hard to replace a transformative talent at quarterback. And when you have, I believe, a road trip to Michigan State next season, and obviously a very difficult Pac-12 with the caliber of coaching talent within this league and the way that it's recruited recently, some level of step downward would not be shocking. So I guess I'll get you out of here then on this. What if you had to make a prediction right now, how do you think this game is going to go and who's going to win?
As far as the prediction goes, I said before the Rose Bowl, I said that game was going to probably turn into a shootout. It turned into a one-sided shootout, but I really see this game kind of going. I don't see Ohio State collapsing in the second half in the way that Florida State did. I really think Cardale Jones is a much smarter quarterback than Jameis Winston as far as decision making from what I've seen so far. Ezekiel Elliott, I think, is a much more intimidating presence in the backfield than what Florida State had. So I really do think with just the caliber of these offenses, I think the game that we're going to see is a shootout all the way till the end, much like the 2012 Rose Bowl the Ducks found themselves in. They wound up beating Wisconsin that year 45-38, and it kind of turned into it came down to one or two big turnovers in that game with, you know, a fumble that Michael Clay jumped on, an interception that Kiko Alonso came up with. And I see that playing out very similarly in this game. I see it going just back and forth, a total tug of war to see kind of who can put up the most points before those later stages of the game where you start to see a little bit more of those mistakes. And Oregon's one of the best teams in the nation with their turnover margin. They were second. Yep. Second only to Michigan State this year with turnover margin. So if they can, I think the way the Oregon wins this game, and I do believe that Oregon is going to win this game. I think it's going to be by a very narrow margin, by, you know, a touchdown or less. But I think the way they win this game is, you know, play a good solid game up front, take the game out of Ezekiel Elliott's hands and force it into Cardale Jones' hands. Back in the Sugar Bowl against Alabama, three of Ohio State's touchdowns came on. There was the 85-yard touchdown run from Elliott. There was that reverse pass. There's an interception return. So the Buckeyes scored 42 points in that game because Cardale Jones wasn't forced to carry him. So if Oregon can force Cardale Jones to carry the Buckeyes, you know, I think he's a talented quarterback, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if he can carry a team. You know, I don't know if he can kind of replicate that Big Ten title game performance. Oregon is obviously, I think, a much better team than Wisconsin is. So if they can, you know, I think it'll be a very, I'm almost going to say, you know, 45-38 Ducks again. But that'll be the key. If kind of who gets going on Ohio State's offense, and if Ezekiel Elliott gets going, they're going to have a really tough time. But I think they'll be able to force the ball into Cardale Jones' hands and force him to carry him. And I think the Ducks are going to squeak out a narrow win here. But it's going to be, you know, it's going to be one for the ages, that's for sure.
All right. Well, listen, hey, thank you so much there. I agree. If that's what happens with Jones having the ball forced in his hands, I can't help but agree that that's a big advantage here for the Ducks. And you'll keep an eye on the fact that Ohio State has displayed a sneaky propensity towards turning the ball over, even in big games, with Wisconsin notwithstanding, near the end of this season. Not sure there's a 5-turnover effort that's on the table like what happened here with Florida State, but two or three, particularly with special teams, with Jalen Marshall struggling a little bit here on punt returns, that would definitely favor the Ducks as well. So again, thank you so much here for hopping on. Real quick, where can our readers and the good people of the internet find you if they want to read your stuff?
So I can be found on Addicted to Quack. Our website's addictedtoquack.com. And I can also be found on Twitter. My handle is at Sean Larson, ATQ. And they can follow me on there. I'll have a couple more articles coming up previewing Ohio State's offense, the running game and the wide receivers. So, yes, everyone check that stuff out and follow me on Twitter. I really appreciate it. Yeah,
all right.
I really appreciate it.
You bet. Hey, thanks again, and enjoy the game, and good luck on Monday.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
All right. That's our friend Sean calling all the way there from the West Coast here from Addicted to Quack. So I feel like we've really kind of hammered this game and covered it from all angles here with our guests. We have a bunch of stuff right now up on the website, breaking things down from an advanced statistical perspective, from a recruiting perspective, from a film perspective. It's going to be great. You know, for me personally, I'm going to stick with my prediction that I made here for SBNation.com and from talking to Mr. Rubenstein. I think Ohio State wins 45-41 because I, for one, think that their advantage with the running game, with a superior offensive line and a top-notch running back talent and a scheme that's designed to be able to find ways to get Ohio State's running offensive playmakers here into space, is a little bit of a bigger advantage than Oregon with their turnovers and with their speed. There's going to be a bunch of points. It's going to be the kind of football game that I really like. I'm not really a 10-7 kind of guy, despite being B1G at heart. And I think Ohio State has a great chance. I think they'll win this one 45-41. Earlier in the show, when we were before we had a chance here to talk with Sean, we were discussing our friend Mr. Senator Tressel, now in the College Football Hall of Fame. Technically, just for his work here at Youngstown State, but kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, with his work at Ohio State included. Yes, he's still under a show cause. Yes, that's still hilarious. And so that comes with the assorted Twitter takes here from the high horse posse. Dennis Dodd, I believe in particular, seems to be kind of on the anti-Tressel bandwagon, and particularly with him being a university president. I don't think that any indiscretions here of NCAA laws, which we are increasingly, excuse me, bylaws, which I think we're increasingly seeing are pretty dumb. And not even with the well-being of student athletes in mind, that perhaps the not following those to the letter, while, you know, not something we want to emulate ethically. I wouldn't try to use Jim Tressel's era at Ohio State as an ethics playbook here for teaching my daughter. But I don't think that invalidates the work that he did at both schools and for a lot of the other positive lessons that he's taught. And I look forward to seeing what he's able to do at Youngstown State as a fundraiser for someone who has very deep ties to Northeast Ohio and in helping lead a university that's going through transition and a difficult time, but such an important engine and such an important part of the economic recovery there of Youngstown. And, you know, you don't necessarily need a PhD to be able to glad hand people and help get grant money into the hands of people who need it and help get students in the doors of the university that can provide them the opportunities for upward mobility. Some other news here on the Ohio State front. You've probably heard this. Damian Harris, the number one running back in the country, five-star, at one time thought to be an Ohio State lead, has now has committed to Alabama. It was pretty much just an Alabama-Kentucky fight at that point. Mike Weber, the former Michigan commit, will be Ohio State's back in this class. Damian Harris, I think, is awesome. He'll do great work at Alabama. From an Ohio State perspective, I don't think there's any cause to be concerned, given that there's some depth here with Elliott and Samuel at running back. Noah Brown may be able to take some stuff out of the backfield. And then Ohio State has a really good running back, at least one already committed for the 2016 class. So I don't think there's going to be any of talent in the backfield for Ohio State here in the future. Also on the website, we have some stories here about how Urban Meyer and Gene Smith opposed the expansion of the playoff. There's going to be a lot of chatter about moving that here to 8. We as a staff are in favor of moving the playoffs to 8. I am not without sympathy to the argument that with current scholarship limits, there's a toil here on football players' bodies, but every other level of football is able to do this. This is one extra game for just a tiny handful of schools. Practically speaking, I don't think a large expansion of scholarship limits is really practical, especially if you're a MAC school or a Mountain West school and you've been able to have some tiny semblance of parity because teams can't just sign 90 to 100 kids anymore. There's no way that they would go along and further give these large schools another advantage. What was talked about is perhaps this might make sense if we just lop a game off the regular season. And that's something I think we have to think about a little bit more. But on the surface, would I trade a game against Kent State for an 18 playoff, even if Ohio State only made that field maybe, 4 out of 10 years, 5 out of 10 years? I think I would. I'm not sure that as a sport that we are missing out on a whole lot by getting rid of these paycheck games, assuming the money from the playoff is enough to be able to remove that burden, especially from your MAC, your CUSA teams who need those games for paychecks. So that will be interesting to see. We also published a couple of days ago one of my favorite things that I've written here in recent history, which was what happens if we put in Ohio State Oregon players in the Oregon Trail and try to use that to predict who's going to win the game. I'm going to go ahead and spoil the article in case you hadn't read it. Cardale Jones was the last person to die. So I guess that means that's a good omen for Ohio State, but everyone died. I was this close to getting to Oregon City, which is something I don't think I've done since I was 8. You get the game, you get to play at recess, but the Oregon Trail takes more than 25 minutes to beat. And so typically, you're trying to jack up your pace to get to Oregon quickly so you can beat recess. And I was usually dying around Soda Spring. And then obviously went 16 years without playing the game. So I got really close. And then in the little action sequence, you're trying to go through the river to dodge all the rocks. And when you try to run that on I have a MacBook Air now at work. So the emulation was screwing things up. So they're going super fast. I hit the shore. And so we lost a couple oxen and Cardale drowned. Puddles got 9 rattlesnake bites. Anyway, it's pretty funny. I encourage you to give it a read. And if you have, I encourage you this weekend to sit down and play the Oregon Trail. Or some of these other recently released DOS games that you can play in your browser. I might try to go play Commander Keen again, or maybe one of the old King's Quest games if I get a chance. So that's the big news here. The only other event that is happening over the weekend before the Ohio State championship game is the Basket Bucks are on the road taking on Indiana. There might have been some semblance of bandwagon jumping off after Ohio State lost at home to Iowa. And we see this on our site and fairly often here on Twitter, where the basketball team doesn't really get a whole lot of attention while football season is still going on, which is a shame because the basketball team's been pretty good recently and I think is still pretty good. But after losing not especially close games, even though the scoreboard indicated they were closer, to Louisville, North Carolina, and then to Iowa, we noticed interest kind of tapering off a little bit. But now the Buckeyes have put together two KenPom top 50 wins in a row. They managed to clobber Illinois at home after starting sluggish in the first half, thanks to a barrage of turnovers. And then they went on the road into the Barn, which is always a very difficult place to play, and beat Minnesota in overtime. A game that probably shouldn't have gone to overtime after D'Angelo Russell went absolutely supernova in the first half, scored 24 points, couldn't miss from downtown. Got a little bit sloppy in the second half. officiating was not great. Amir Williams had a costly technical foul, but the Buckeyes win. And so now, if you're, you know, again, we're doing this in like early January, so Ohio State's looking like a potential 4 or 5 seed, and they have multiple chances here to get wins over some pretty solid RPIs, some solid KenPom squads, before they start to tangle with Wisconsin and Maryland, which I believe, I'm looking, I don't have this schedule in front of me, I believe they play only, those teams only once each, both of them at home. So as the schedule does Ohio State some favors here if they're able to get some production out of their front court. Now, if they switch primarily to man-to-man defense, I like their chances against Indiana. It will be a difficult game, but a good one. And that should be able to put them in contention here to compete for a top three, top four spot here in the Big Ten. And then you never know what will happen. So sure, watch that game. That's at noon. Be sure to tune in here on Monday, obviously, for Ohio State's national championship. Be sure to go to landgrantholyland.com to read all the stories here, digging into this game on every level, and anything that you would want to know about Oregon as well. Once again, this has been the Hangout in the Holy Land. We're at Land Grant 33. I am at Matt SBN. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on, occasionally we're on FanCred. We're all over iTunes. We're all over Blog Talk Radio. So be sure to grab us. You can also shoot me an email anytime, matt.brown@sbnation.com. We will be doing another post-game call-in show after the game. And then I think we're going to retire that format a little bit. We're going to bring it out a couple of times during basketball season. We'll probably do it for the Big Ten tournament. We may do it for National Signing Day as that comes up here next month. That number is 215-383-3986. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Go Bucks.